Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former professional runner. Today's guest is Riley Beatty. Riley is a registered dietitian and owner of Riley Beatty Sports Nutrition. Riley played D1 collegiate soccer at NC State and found her way to running after college, getting into some longer distances like half marathons. She had her daughter just over a year ago and recently ran her first race postpartum. The day this episode was recorded, she actually found out she was accepted into the 2025 New York City Marathon, which she'll be running this fall. Riley has so many helpful and inspiring things to share, and I really hope that you guys enjoy today's episode. Hi, Riley. Thank you so much for being on the Fueling Forward podcast.
Hi, Maddie. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to chat with you today.
Riley and I go way back. We were both at San Diego State in grad school together. We worked on the same group project. And Riley, you have such a great story. And you recently got into running, which is really fun. And, you know, like I said, we were talking kind of before we came on here. And a lot of my guests so far are pro runners. And I love talking to people who got into running a little bit later and are kind of discovering the sport now. First off, congratulations. Riley just found out she got into the New York City Marathon, which is huge. And it's on her birthday. So what a fun way to celebrate. So with that, tell us a little bit about your recent journey into running and marathoning.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a journey, actually. I would say that I'm kind of in my running era right now, if you can say that, because I have always loved running. Growing up playing soccer, it was something that we just always did to make sure that, you know, we had fitness on the field. And even on those off days, like, I love to run around the neighborhood. And I just have always really enjoyed the sport. And I actually kind of got into, like, my first phase of running, like, right after I finished playing college soccer. And at the time, I was actually using running for a really negative purpose. And I didn't even realize it at the time, but I was using running as a way to almost as an excuse for a lot of the disordered behaviors I had when it came to just fueling my body and nutrition and just exercise in general. And just retiring from college sport, you know, I had moved in to this running kind of thing, you can say. And unfortunately, I was just really like mistreating my body. I had a lot of injuries. I wasn't fueling myself properly. And there wasn't really any longevity in it for me. I did it for about 2 years after I played college sports. And then it kind of died off. And it was just something that I was doing like a couple times a week, but I wasn't really ever like taking it seriously or racing. I did run my first race, oh my gosh, like 10 years ago. And I remember like looking at my husband as soon as I had finished and being like, I'm never doing that ever again, because I had like nagging injuries. And again, I just wasn't treating my body really, really well. And I'm really in this kind of like second, I guess, era, this running era, being postpartum. I really have a different like appreciation for the sport. And it's something that I can do with my daughter because I push her a lot of the times when I run. And I'm just in a lot better of a place with it. And I'm just really enjoying it a lot more right now.
That's so awesome. And I love that. And I talk about this all the time with running, but it can be there for you in different seasons of life. And it's really fun to have that mean different things throughout your life. And so special that it's something that you get to share with your daughter. As somebody who doesn't currently have a kid, what is it like running with a stroller? I have always wondered, is it harder? I would assume it's harder.
I was actually just joking about this with my mom earlier today, because it is definitely harder. And I think I underestimated how hard it would be, because there are certain things like hills and wind that can really slow your pace down, you could say. So like yesterday I was almost, you know, completely horizontal with my body, even though I was on a like flat kind of greenway, because the wind was so strong. So I was definitely pushing my little girl. I probably looked pretty funny doing it, but hey, I was out there doing it.
Mom strength is real. And just imagine how it's going to feel running a marathon without a stroller. You're going to be like Superwoman out there.
I ran my first race postpartum a couple of months ago, and it was actually such a like an out of body experience, because I had been doing all of my training with a stroller that I didn't really like know my pace. And again, I was just doing it to be out there and like for fun and just, celebrating my body, like being postpartum. And it was such a weird experience because again, I didn't have like this 20-pound baby and stroller that I was pushing.
That's amazing. Well, that's gonna be so fun to get to train with your daughter, spend more time with her. Just so special that that's something that you've been able to find and have a healthier relationship with running. And speaking of kind of going back in time, you were a soccer player growing up and played in college. So tell us a little bit about how you got into sports and what your childhood looked like with sports.
Yeah, I was always a kid that was playing outside. Like, always used to do, you could always find me outside. I was always the girl at recess that like wanted to beat the boys. Played lots of different sports, and soccer is just the one that stuck. So, played soccer probably from age 5, up through college. And I always really loved it. And this is gonna make me sound old. It was like 10 to 15 years ago. And I think, as I kind of, transitioned like into a higher level, there was always such a focus of things that were happening on the field, not off the field. So as I started to get recruited, as I started to get more pressure on me as an athlete, then there started to be a lot of other pressures. And I know it's something that you and I have talked a lot about, but there was a lot of pressures with how my body looked, nutrition, and it wasn't something that we necessarily focused on in a positive way. Once upon a time,
Absolutely.
I think it's definitely changing now, like the landscape at least, and a lot more people are talking about it. But I definitely started to, I would say, have a negative relationship with a lot of the things outside of soccer that were related to nutrition, exercise, all that stuff.
Yeah, such a common experience. And, running is so different from soccer in that. Like, especially in the recruiting process, it's based on times and performances. And so, in some ways, it's a little bit more like objective. If you're running the times and you're standing out, then people are looking at you as an athlete. But I'm curious, tell us about the recruiting process in soccer. I would assume it's a little more subjective and it's kind of harder to figure out what you need to be doing to get recruited.
Yeah, that is such a good point that you bring up because in soccer, coaches come and they watch you play, right? So it's not necessarily based off of, how many passes you made, and there are those types of statistics, but also it's kind of like the first impression of a coach, right? So if a coach comes and sees you, then, if you have a good game, you might go up higher on their list. If you don't have a good game, you might be dropped off of their list. So there's a little bit of a luck kind of aspect to it as well.
Yeah, and it sounds like a lot of pressure on like a specific game. If a coach of a school that you're interested in is there, that's your shot. And I think with running that can happen, but it's also more just generally over the course of a season, times you're running and how you're finishing. So in some ways, a little less pressure with running. And with soccer, I feel like if you have someone who's coming to your game and they're watching you, I would imagine that body image and how you look is really on the forefront of your mind.
Yes, because there seems to be, and you probably hear this a lot of the time too from the athletes that you work with, but there's always this like idea of a look, air quotes, right? Like a specific look that you're supposed to have to succeed in a specific sport. And no one can actually really define what that look is. Like, it's all very subjective. And a lot of the athletes, myself included, put pressure to look a certain way, to believe that you have to have a certain body type to succeed in your sport.
Yeah, and that is something that running and soccer definitely have in common. Something I hear all the time from people I work with, and just that I experienced too in the running world. So I'm curious for you with soccer, what do you feel like your first experience was with nutrition, or when did it kind of click for you that adjusting your nutrition matters? Or maybe you didn't realize it mattered, but you were doing it as a way to try to help yourself in some capacity in the sport.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I was always a kid that loved food, right? And we even talk about sometimes with dietitians like ourselves, like you either get into nutrition because you like love food or you fear food. And I was always the kid growing up that loved food, but I never made the connection of like what I was eating and my performance. So I had always loved food, had a pretty good relationship with it, and I started to go through puberty around my lovely teenage years. And I had already committed to play D1 soccer. And I remember One day, my coach pulled me aside and told me if I didn't lose weight, if I didn't change the way that my body looked, like I was going to lose my scholarship.
Wow.
And, as a competitive athlete, like hearing those words are like devastating, especially if this is something that you've been working towards or there's a goal that you've been working towards for an extended period of time. This was really devastating. And that's when I think I really started to fear food. Because I was so intent on trying to fix this problem that my coach had brought awareness to. And then when I was looking online, I even went to a dietitian. There was such a focus on like what I needed to cut out, how many calories I couldn't be eating. And I started to really put a lot of pressure on like how my body looked, and started to try to control food as a way to control my body.
Yeah, that's it's so hard because there is that you're going to do anything to be a successful athlete, and it's what makes us, that personality trait is what makes us good athletes, but it also really sets us up for potentially detrimental behaviors like focusing on food and body image. And I'm curious, as you started, now fearing food and focusing so much on body image, how did that impact your relationship with soccer?
Such another like really good question because I almost like kept the two separate even though they're so combined, right? Where I was thinking, okay, I need to try to look a certain way, and then like soccer is separate. Like whatever's happening on the field is not necessarily going to be affected by what I'm doing off the field. And it drastically hurt my performance, even though at the time I didn't realize it. And I started to have a lot of nagging injuries. My confidence started to drop, which is really important in sport. I started to have like lower energy, right? And I started to also, be hungry during games. I started cramping, all of those fun, underfueling symptoms. And we've talked about this before, but it's almost like such a slow process. And there's also just this athlete mentality that like to be successful, sometimes we have to be miserable in our sport because we have to push through the hard, and we don't realize that sometimes there's an easier or there's a better way to approach something.
Totally. Yeah, there is that idea that we're athletes, so we should be suffering. We should be tired. We should be sore. This should be hard. And while that's true sometimes, it shouldn't be true all the time. And so looking back at, high school Riley, who was going through this, now that what was going on as a dietitian, what are some things that you started noticing that now you attribute to underfueling?
Definitely, first thing that I noticed was loss of a period. And at the time, I didn't understand that that was related to underfueling. I thought that was related to like being fit because every time that my season would start to increase or I would have preseason, I would lose my period or it would get lighter or, it would just become abnormal. And I started to make that connection like, okay, I'm fit. That's why I don't get my period. So that was like a big. That's a huge red flag now as a dietitian. I started to feel super sluggish on the field, having lots of nagging injuries. And even my entire college career, I spent a lot of time in the training room. So I think those are probably like the biggest two things that I could have like brought awareness to that underfueling. But something I also always say is that high school Riley and college Riley was not ready for dietitian Riley. I would have never listened to some of the things that I say because I was in such a bad place mentally and mindset-wise that I don't think I would have laughed at myself that I told you to drink a sports drink with carbohydrate in it.
Totally. And it's so interesting, like when you think about past selves, and I like that you use the term like ready to hear that or ready to, talk to dietitian Riley, because there is this component of resistance a lot of the times for athletes who, in the back of their minds, they know that what they're doing is detrimental. It's not the right thing, but they're in so deep and they're so committed that it's really hard in that moment to see that. So if you were talking to high school Riley as dietitian Riley, is there anything that you might say to her to try to help her see that this might not be the right way to do this?
That's a really good question. I think I would have definitely started slow with her. I would have started slow with her And I would have definitely talked about everything from a performance angle because, again, there was so much of this like wrapped up in my body image and my self-worth off of the field, and it was really affecting my confidence in all areas of my life. So I would have definitely, I don't know. I'm really kind of reflecting on this because I've actually been thinking about this a lot lately, especially with my running journey, and I just like don't know if I was ready at all to listen to myself.
Yeah, totally. And I think what you said earlier about making it about performance, I see that a lot. I think a lot of runners were very data driven, and a lot of us are very like, show me the science behind it. Like, you could tell me that eating more is going to help me, but how? And I think that is something that could potentially resonate with somebody in that headspace. But at the same time, yeah, if you're not ready to hear it, you're not going to internalize that and actually make any changes. And I think you and I grew up in the same, era in high school, and I feel like there was this narrative that not having a period was very normal. It meant you were fit, kind of like you said earlier. And I'm curious, did you hear that from like a doctor or a coach or somebody else who I think that kind of perpetuates the idea that what I'm doing, even though it's not good, maybe it's working.
I remember going to my pediatrician who I loved, and she would be like, yeah, this happens to athletes. Like they often don't get their period. And that belief is reinforced because I remember, sitting in the locker room and we like went around the locker room as a team and we were talking, like nobody had their period. And it was
Wow.
like, oh, you don't get your period. Wow, you don't get your period. And, we talk about Reds and we talk about the female athlete triad and HA. And I don't necessarily know if we always talk about it in team sports, right? There's a lot of research done on it for like runners and endurance athletes, but it's not something that we're maybe looking at in these team sport environments. And, growing up in a team sport and now working with a lot of team sport athletes, it's unfortunately still very common.
It really is. And that's so funny that you guys went around and like compared notes, like, oh, you don't have your period? Oh, neither do I. And what I hear in that moment is like there could easily be, especially with teenage girl athletes, there could be this environment where it becomes sort of like a competition or like, oh, this none of these people have their period, which means I should not have mine, so I should be trying to do whatever I can to essentially lose that. And the team environment is a huge impact, has a huge impact on food and body image. And so I'm curious for you as well, struggling with that, was that anything that you noticed within your team? Were other girls also struggling?
Yes. And I think it becomes kind of like what you talk about, like a competition or a badge of honor, because you see certain athletes on your team that maybe you're competing for a certain spot, right? Or a place on a team. Or maybe they're a little bit, fitter than you, or they've, performed better in games, or they have more playing time. And so it's really easy to think that what we're doing is wrong and what somebody else is doing is right, and trying to make modifications or trying to, mimic their behaviors so that we can, achieve more success in our sport is something that we commonly see. And this is something that I definitely practiced too, because again, I can remember certain athletes on the, on the team when we went around the locker room who were like, I don't have my period. And I'd be like, okay, great. I don't have mine. That means I'm doing the right things.
Totally. And I think it's so hard too at that age because there is so much comparison just to your peers in general. And I remember being in high school and like all you want to do is fit in and you just want to, be friends with the cool people and do what everyone else is doing and not stand out. And I think it's so hard in those moments to make a decision for yourself and not get swept up in that environment. So, is there any advice that you could give to a high school athlete who's listening that maybe finds themselves in that environment?
My biggest two pieces of advice would be the first one is everybody has their own ceiling. Everybody has their own level that they can be successful in sport. And therefore, we can't look at what other people are doing because even if they're doing, the wrong things and they might appear, quote unquote, more successful, how successful could they actually be if they were doing the right things? And so I think that is a big. Or maybe it's a hard truth to realize. I mean, I don't know if you hear this because you work with a lot of pro athletes, but I hear a lot of my teammate ate hot Cheetos before practice and they beat me on the fitness test. Like, why can they do that, but I can't do that? It's like, okay, again, everybody has their own ceiling. And then the second thing is comparison is something that's really, really challenging. And not everybody can be great. And sometimes being great means we have to do things differently than other people. And I think that's something that's really challenging, especially for female athletes. We do a lot of period recovery work at RBSN, and a lot of the time athletes are like, I feel like I'm eating so much more than my teammates. And that's what they just need to do to get their period back. And as an athlete, you're going to have to also eat more than a lot of the people who are around you. And that's totally okay. But that can be something that's really hard to grasp and to feel because, like you mentioned, like then you kind of get like this idea of being othered, or not belonging.
Totally. I love that. And I always say, like, eyes on your own plate, which is sort of exactly what you're saying. And even if you are comparing yourself to your teammates, like you just said, your teammates might not have their period. They might not be healthy. And so, of course, you're going to have to eat more than them if you're trying to be healthy and maintain a period. And that's such great advice. I know that it's hard to do. And so, you went on then, I'm curious, from high school to college, kind of struggling in high school, going straight into a D1 athlete environment. How was that transition for you when you were kind of in that headspace struggling with nutrition and body image?
It was really hard, I think. And I don't even, again, I feel like I didn't even realize it was happening, if that makes sense. Like, because the transition was, I don't know, it's a big change. It's a lot of changes that are happening, you know, for these young kids, right? A long time ago for me. And you don't know any different. So it's just kind of like, this is what's happening, right? Like, I remember, you know, freshman year coming in and all the seniors being like, you have smalls on your shorts right now, but by senior year, you're going to have a large on your short. Like,
Wow.
and I was like, I can't have that. I can't have that. I got to be different. Like, so I had all this pressure, but like, you don't really like know any different. So even if you are going into this, like, you know, toxic environment, you don't necessarily know what's happening at that time.
Totally. That's so interesting that your teammates said that. So were they saying that in like a negative way, like the kind of idea of the freshman 15, or were they saying it in a way of like you're going to be gaining muscle and getting stronger?
Gaining muscle and getting stronger, but that was almost said with like a negative connotation, like it's bad to be strong.
That's so interesting. And this is where running and soccer, are different, but also similar in that the more strength you have, the better it can be for performance. And I always wonder, like, how did we get here where becoming strong and gaining muscle is a bad thing?
I have no idea. Whoever came up with this idea, I would like to talk to them because it's causing a lot of problems.
It really is. And you shared that when you were in college, you were still kind of struggling with underfueling, and you felt like that ultimately contributed to a really big injury that you had your senior season. So tell us a little bit about what it was like getting injured your senior year and how that affected that relationship with food.
It honestly made it really like a lot worse. So first game of senior year in college, I tore my ACL, which is a big injury that happens in women's soccer. And I thought I got away with it. I thought I was gonna, you know, be clear with my career from that. And through that experience, I remember I no longer was able to obviously train or compete. And because of that, like athlete mentality of striving towards certain goals or having control or seeing progress, my progress really, I guess my focus really turned to like, how can I be in a smaller body? You know, looking at certain numbers because a lot of athletes are like data driven, numbers driven. And I had limited things that I could succeed at. So I started to really try to control my food even more. I thought because I was in recovery with my ACL injury that I didn't need to fuel my body properly. And throughout that journey, I had a lot of ups and downs. And that was really the first time I made the connection that food is actually a good thing. And it was something that I had been ignoring for a really long time.
Yeah, I think I see this so much with runners where when sport is taken away from you when you're injured or your activity, you're forced to step away from being so active, the first thing that runners and anyone really responds with is like, oh, that means I don't need to eat as much, or that means that I shouldn't be thinking about nutrition because that's not, I don't need it. I haven't earned my fuel by training. And as a dietitian, what can you say to the importance of fueling when you're injured, even though you're not training?
First thing is, if you are losing weight, that means you're not fueling properly because we don't want to be in an energy deficit in any type of injury recovery because that means you're not giving your body the energy that it needs and the nutrients it needs. Because a lot of the time we're focused on the energy in food, but there's six essential nutrients, right? And three of them don't provide energy. So if we're under fueling in energy, we're also likely going to be under fueling in like the micronutrients and then also just water as well. And that was something that I made a huge mistake on, was really focused on that restriction instead of thinking about like, what can I add in? What can I optimize, nutritionally?
Yes, for sure. And I think like the building blocks of healing tissue is that's what we're getting from food. And your energy needs when you're injured at rest can be increased by up to 50%, which is huge. So even if you're sitting on the couch doing nothing while you're injured, you are using more fuel than when you're sitting on the couch when you're in season and not injured. And that's something that can be hard for athletes to wrap their minds around too, is like, yes, you're not as active, but that doesn't mean that your energy needs have decreased. And if anything, they often increase, which is such a hard thing to wrap your mind around when you're struggling with this idea of kind of restriction and, trying to avoid your body size increasing, which is so hard.
I think we've really gotten into this mindset, unfortunately, from maybe social media or just society in general, where we're seeing days that are, we don't have training as like off days or rest days when we should be viewing them as recovery days. So we shouldn't be taking things away, but we should be adding to those days to help us optimize our performance. Because as an athlete, I don't know if you really have days off, right? We just have different focuses on certain days. And if we are skipping meals, we're not eating, all of the all of the macronutrients. We're not, focused on hydration, focused on sleep. We're not working on that recovery piece. It's going to hinder our performance.
I love that you just distinguish the difference between like an off day versus a recovery day, because that's so true. Like even, runners and a collegiate athlete at any level, who's in any sport, there's not really much of an off season, right? Like we're either in competition season, we're in preseason, we're conditioning, we're, building mileage, whatever it is we're doing. Athletes in general do not get much downtime. And this was a huge thing for me personally in college. Like, we would go from cross country to indoor season to outdoor season. We would maybe get 3 weeks off total for the entire year, and then you'd go into summer training. And I think for me, those 2 weeks off were like life-saving. Like, if I didn't have that time off and if I didn't continue to fuel, there's no way you're making it through the entire season. And that's something that you can definitely speak to, like, especially with tearing your ACL in the first game. That means you got through summer training and you did all these things to get there. So, yeah, what is that like when you get through all that training and you have it taken away? That's something that I think also contributes to struggling to fuel when you're injured.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's very traumatic, right? It turns your life upside down because, again, like you're used to a certain, training regimen, and then it also you're used to a certain like athlete identity. And when that is all taken away from you, it can feel very overwhelming, and you don't necessarily know what to, look for. You don't know how to fuel your body. You just don't know what to do because a huge part of you has been taken away.
100%. And that athlete identity is a huge thing with injuries and with, body changes. That's something that we've also talked about. So that transition from high school to college, did you experience any of those kind of quote unquote dreaded body changes? And how did you navigate those at the time versus how would you tell somebody to navigate those now?
What I didn't realize at the time was transitioning from like high school and club soccer to college soccer is it's a beast, right? It is a different sport. It's different training. It's, a different game. I remember my first game as a freshman, I got destroyed, Maddie. Like I got knocked down. The girl was like, "Get out of my way, like you little freshman." And I just remember my eyes like being opened to like, this is a different game, right? Everything, and again, it's the same sport, but it's just different, right? The girls are stronger, the girls are faster, they're lifting more weights, you have more training. And of course, your body's going to look different. Of course, your nutritional needs are going to change. And I don't think that we talk about that enough, right? And even, I don't know if this happens with the running community, but from high school to college and then college to pro, and we see this, in other professional sports, but the levels change, the amount of, training changes, the sport changes. So I wish we were talking more about like how your body's going to change probably with that as well.
Yeah, and expecting it and knowing it's going to happen, acknowledging it and accepting it as something that means you're ready for this next level, not as something that means now your performance is going to be negatively impacted and you've made this horrible mistake by allowing your body to change. And especially for female athletes, we're all ready for that shift when we're teenagers, when we go through puberty. We know that's coming, even though it's uncomfortable and it's difficult. I think we're a little bit better mentally equipped to handle that one because we know it's going to happen. But there's another shift that tends to happen between high school and college, and then often another shift when you graduate. And it's so hard because it feels like you've done something wrong and you're like, why is my body changing again? Like, this isn't supposed to be happening, but it absolutely is. And I love how you phrase that with it. You're like leveling up. Like, you can't handle college training without having gone through high school training, and you can't handle professional training without having done, years of collegiate training. And so it really is something that's essential for you to improve in sport. But again, how did we get here where we all say this shouldn't be happening? Hold on to the smallest version of yourself as long as possible.
Yes, and I actually went through another change and shift because I'm postpartum now, right? Which again, like my body's never going to look the same as it did before, but like I had a baby, like I grew a human. Like that's really cool, right?
Yes.
And so it's not fair for me to expect myself to look like I did before. And that's okay. Like you
Exactly.
change, and I think we don't like the idea of change, maybe as a society. Like, there's, all this pressure where it's like, well, in high school, I weighed this much or I looked this way. And it's like, well, when you were a baby, you also looked and weighed a certain amount, but you changed and you grew. And that's going to happen. And it's not a bad thing.
Yes, exactly. It's not a bad thing. And in a lot of situations, I think it really shows your hard work and your strength and the seasons of life that you've been through. And it's a badge of honor in and of itself to allow your body to shift with you throughout those seasons in life. And it's so hard to navigate. I don't want to diminish that, but it's something that's still so key to just overall health and performance. So, I really want to talk about your transition into postpartum, but before we do that, any last pieces of advice for an athlete who is heading into college? Is there anything that they can do maybe before they get there, or if they find themselves in that situation of being injured and being out of the sport, what can athletes in those situations do to better prepare themselves for potential changes?
I think it becoming educated and surrounding yourself with positive influences. Again, like I mentioned, like I didn't know better, right? And coming into maybe a toxic environment, I didn't know anything that was different, but I never thought to challenge those beliefs. And maybe I didn't want to. Again, maybe I wasn't ready, but always remember that there is a different or another way. And even if you're not ready for that other way, like still try to explore that. And I think, listening to podcasts like this, following positive Instagram accounts, I know we have like a love-hate relationship with social media, but really, almost like sitting back and being like, is this really what's happening? Is this really the best thing? Versus just being like, yeah, this is the way to do it.
Totally, like being a critical consumer I feel like that trend on social media one, like realizing that you have free will, like you have free will, you can change what you're doing at any time. You don't have to follow what everyone else is doing or what you thought was the right way your whole life if you have all these signs pointing towards maybe it's not. So that's such great advice. And after college, so you went through that insane injury your senior year. What did sport look like for you when you graduated from college?
It was a very interesting transition because I lost that athlete identity because I was no longer part of a team sport, but I probably was training more than I did when I, played a college sport because I didn't know anything different. And what happened was now I was in control of my training versus a coach being in control of training, and that negatively affected my body image and my just control. My whole kind of disordered eating, I would say, journey. Because again, now I had more control, which what we're kind of looking for sometimes when we have the disordered eating patterns.
Totally. And you had mentioned earlier that you were kind of using running as a way to control some of those things. And I do see that a lot in runners. I think anyone who's been involved in running or sport in general, we have this need to fill that side of ourselves that's like always trying to push ourselves to the brink and always trying to get the most out of ourselves and, find a way to just have something that allows us to feel in control in certain situations. And you said you felt like your relationship with running at that point wasn't healthy, but now it is. So what has changed for you as running has shifted from being this maybe a more negative tool for control into something that is so meaningful to your life?
Like I shared, I've been thinking a lot about this because I'm just in a completely different space now with running. And like, ironically, I'm performing better. And I know, right? Like I'm not anywhere close to the level you're at, but I'm running faster than I ever have. And I'm postpartum and I'm obviously the oldest I've ever been. So it just, I feel like I just had such a negative relationship with it because I was using it as a way to like try to get into a smaller body. And when we talk about nutrition, a lot of the time we talk about the why. So like, why are we choosing to do certain things when it comes to nutrition? And my why with running wasn't from a healthy place. Like I wasn't doing it because I was enjoying it. I was doing it because, I wasn't able to eat candy. I made this rule up, right? Air quotes, I wasn't able to eat candy. But if I ran, I for a long period of time, I needed intra-fuel carbs. And I could eat the candy. So maybe I was doing it because I liked it in air quotes, but I was really doing it as a way to like fuel my disordered eating.
Totally. And that idea of food rules is something that I see a lot in athletes where it's okay if I eat this in this situation, but not in this situation. And yeah, it's funny. We sometimes use running as a way to justify fueling. And going through pregnancy, having to take a little bit of time to recover, take a step back from training, you can't really train as much. And you've been really candid on, social media about your relationship with food being in the best place that it's ever been. So how did that work that you put in on your relationship with food? How did that help you in that season of life when training looked so different?
I think one of the biggest things that happened for me is I wasn't able to run because of my pregnancy. And again, like I've shared, I have had like almost two phases of running, right? I had that, running phase immediately after college. And then I started working in college sports and I didn't have any time for running. Let's be real. And, starting my own business and all of that stuff. So I kind of, started to really want to get back into running almost right before I got pregnant. Then I got pregnant. Couldn't run for, a year and being postpartum like a year and a half. And so it was almost like greeting an old friend. Like I was just excited to be back out there, right? And things had changed and I now had like a deeper appreciation for my body. Going through pregnancy, I think I realized how bad like my previous body dysmorphia had been. And I also realized like how much I was underappreciating my body.
Yeah, that's so powerful to hear. And I know that there are a lot of women listening to this who are either going through pregnancy or postpartum, and especially with that athlete mindset where it's like, I need to get back as fast as I can, and I need to push myself as hard as I can, you know, within the constraints of what I'm allowed to do from a medical and health standpoint even. So is there any advice that you can give to a new mom or someone who's immediately postpartum, that would help them navigate this phase?
Kind of like what we talked about with college athletics and high school athletics is that comparison trap. If we weren't comparing ourselves to each other, I don't think there would be a lot of this pressure that we're putting onto ourselves. But, we see all these stories highlighted, or, we hear these things where you need to be back to your pre-pregnancy body in 3 months, right? Or you need to lose the weight within a, like all this stuff. And like, why are we trying to go back again, right? Like, you had a baby. Like, that's awesome. And I think just reminding ourselves that like this is such a athletic, right, feat that you've accomplished, right? Like now when I'm on my long runs, I'm like, I had a baby. This isn't nothing. But just remembering like not to compare ourselves and like to give yourself some grace. And this journey is very individualized for everybody. Everybody's going to go through it separately, and like you had a baby, you're keeping that baby alive, like you're doing amazing.
100%. Yeah, all moms are incredible. Going through childbirth, being a caregiver, whether it's for the first time or whether you have multiple children, it's a lot of work, and it is in its own way leveling up. Like we talked about, leveling up from high school to college, now you're leveling up to a mom who's active, and it doesn't need to look a certain way. It doesn't need to look like anyone else's journey. And like you said, appreciating where you are in the process is a huge part of that. And I think a theme with this, and something that I'm loving about your story, is that you went without a period for so long, and you were able ultimately to get it back and have a healthy pregnancy. So tell us a little bit about what that process looked like for you getting your period back.
Yes. So it's really interesting, actually, because I remember one day, it was actually at San Diego State when we were in school together. I was like, I've had enough of this. I've had enough of this. Like, I'm always tired. Like, I know all these negative side effects. And like, there has to be a better way. And kind of throughout that process, my like fear of food kind of, converted back over to me loving it, right? And me just, not giving my body, enough credit. I kind of turned over that switch, and I think I was finally ready to like listen to Dietitian Riley. Like at this point, I was ready to listen to Dietitian Riley. I wasn't, 100% in the journey yet, but I started to realize like there has to be a better way to this, right? Like we're in school, we're learning about this nutrition, right? Like I've been doing this for so long, and I'm not seeing the success, or I'm not seeing the results that I want. Like, there has to be a better way. And from there, I started kind of slowly on this journey, right? And I made a lot of progress, right? You help a lot of people, but probably, I'm probably gonna learn something else soon, right? The journey never ends. So I think the journey is really, really overwhelming, but it is possible.
Yeah, that's so good to hear. That's one of the most common things I get asked is, I don't have a period. Will I be able to get it back? And how long will it take? And you actually have, at Riley Beattie Sports Nutrition, you have your own period recovery program, which I absolutely love. And so anyone who's struggling with getting their period back, I highly recommend that you check that out. But for anyone listening, do you have just a few quick tips on some things people can start trying to try to get their period back?
Definitely. Again, first of all, if you are going on that journey, like congratulations. It can be a little overwhelming, it can be a little frustrating, but my recommendation is to always start small, right? Make sustainable changes, because the big thing with energy availability and having a regular menstrual cycle is consistency. Something that we don't want you to do is make all these changes, maybe go on the internet, see that you need to eat this many calories, you can't compete in sport, and then you do that for a month, get your period back, and then you resort back to old behaviors. So I highly recommend, starting small, making small sustainable changes. If you are an athlete who is still competing, one of the first things that you can do is making sure that you're bookending your training sessions with the right nutrition. So making sure that we're not doing any fasted workouts, we have the right amount of carbohydrates before training, the right amount of carbohydrates and proteins after training to really help, ensure we have energy availability, at least around that training session. And that's often where I recommend that a lot of athletes start.
That's so great. And I think the fasted training is a huge one that I really try to encourage runners. Do not go on your runs without eating, even though you can get through a run. You know, a lot of us have done it and you're like, oh, I feel fine. I got through the run. I had a great run. I'm sure you did. But the question is, what was happening in your body to allow you to have a good run without any fuel on board? And those are the things that disrupt hormones so much that really do affect getting your period back. So that's really great advice. And how long did it take you ultimately to get your period back to becoming regular?
A couple of months.
Wow.
And that's what we see with a lot of our athletes too, is like, you can get your period back, you know, in 2 to 3 months if you apply the right nutrition and if you, you know, kind of jump in and are ready to, you know, make those changes.
And how long did you go before that without a regular cycle?
So this is actually really interesting, but a lot of the time, a lot of my college career, after I didn't have my period, I went on to birth control because then I got my period. And so this is why I'm really outspoken actually about this. And I'm not anti-birth control. I'm very pro-choice. I'm very also open about that. But we have to understand why we're doing something.
That, I'm so glad you brought that up. So for anyone listening, just a quick explanation. What is the difference between a true period and a period on birth control?
Again, not a physician. I'm just going to put that out there. Not medical advice. But when we are in a state of low energy availability, our body is going to downregulate certain processes that are deemed like unessential to help form a survival perspective, right? So when we have low energy availability, one of the processes that gets downregulated is the menstrual cycle. So if we are, you know, in a state of low energy availability, we're not going to have that like monthly bleed. We're not going to have a lot of those PMS symptoms because we're just not going to have a consistent cycle. With birth control, right, we do have a monthly bleed, but that is because of the synthetic hormone. It's not from the natural fluctuation of hormones. And even if we are in a low state of energy availability, we can still get that monthly bleed, but it's not a true period. So if we are in a low energy availability state, that might be hidden because we're on birth control and we're getting that monthly bleed.
Such a good distinction to make. And I think the same goes for, you can be in a state of low energy availability and still have your period. You don't have to have lost your period to be struggling with low energy availability or red. So it really is so individualized and so nuanced, and every person, it looks different for every person. Period recovery looks different, but I think Riley's story can highlight for all of us that you can get it back, and you can have gone through not having a period for a very long time and still get it back by doing the right things with fueling. And you were able to continue to be active. I think that's another reason I hear a lot of people hesitant to go all in on getting their period back. They're worried that their activity or exercise is going to be taken away from them. And there is a way to balance it. There's a way to have all of it. So really inspiring story. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And kind of lastly, you've gone on to be a dietitian. You're the first dietitian guest on this podcast. So tell us a little bit about your business and what you do working with athletes.
Yeah. So I'm the owner of Riley Beatty Sports Nutrition, or RBSN. And we have myself and then also Jenna Fisher, who's another dietitian on staff. We really focus and specialize in period recovery for female athletes. That's something that we're super passionate about. And we do have a 4-month program where we help athletes get their period back and then keep it. We work with all different types of athletes. We work with elite athletes. We work with recreational athletes. Something that I hear all the time is people being like, I don't have my period, or like, I have reds, but like, I'm not really an athlete. I'm like, girl, you're training for high rocks. Like, you're running marathons. Like, you're training 2 hours a day. Like, you are an athlete. Like, there's not just a one size fits all when it comes to athletes. So work with all different types of athletes. I work with a lot of our team sport athletes, our elite athletes, and then Jenna works with a lot of our runners and our endurance athletes.
Yes, that's such a good point. You do not have to be an elite athlete to experience reds or to lose your period. It really is just about that energy balance anyone can be susceptible to low energy availability. So even if you think you don't fit the bill for somebody who might lose their period from underfueling or overtraining, you could. So definitely reach out to Riley and her team if you are struggling with getting your period back. And before we get into our rapid fire questions, I just want to finish up with, you're a mom now, you have a daughter. What's something that you are going to try to instill in her when it comes to nutrition and body image?
I just hope she has fun with it. Like, I really want her to have a positive experience, right? So I really want her to enjoy food, love food, you know, be able to make mindful decisions on her own, be proud of herself, you know, love herself. And I think that's what I'm really trying to like inspire in her. Hopefully it works out, but I just really want her to like, you know, enjoy it. Hopefully she likes sports because we're a big sports people, but I want her just to, and you know, enjoy being active and just enjoy food.
That's incredible. She's so lucky to have you as her mom. Thank you for sharing all of your incredible wisdom. It's been so fun talking with you. I want to wrap up with our fun rapid fire questions. So I would like to start with, what is your go-to pre-run snack?
It depends on how much time I have. I know that's a dietitian answer, but usually I'm going for like some sort of gummy. Like, I'm a gummy candy person, so I'm really loving the Black Forest organic gummy bears. I grab those a lot of the time before a run or before a workout.
Awesome. And I think you said you fuel with gummies during your runs, right?
I do. I'm not a big gel person, so I've been doing the gummies during my run, and I'm also doing honey sticks. I don't know why I have a block when it comes to gels, but I'm not a gel person, so even if I bring them with me, I'm not usually utilizing them. So I like gummies and I like the honey sticks during my runs.
Awesome. So anyone out there who doesn't like gels, there are other options available. What would you pick for your last meal?
I'm a big pasta girl. I think I would have just a buffet of different types of pasta. Like, if I could have like pasta tapas, like that would be my last meal.
Interesting. Pasta tapas. I love that. So you just get a variety of types of pasta.
Yeah. Like, bring them all. Let's go.
Sounds amazing. What is your favorite dessert?
Everybody's always shocked to hear as a dietitian that my favorite dessert is cupcakes. I don't know what it is, but I love a cupcake.
I am a huge cupcake person. I love cupcakes. What's your like cupcake flavor?
Ooh, I like the celebration type cupcakes, like funfetti cupcakes.
Yes.
Yep. Now that you're in LA, you're going to have to try Susie's cupcakes. Okay. Or Susie's cakes.
Amazing.
They're really good. Sprinkles also has cupcakes, but I love Susie cakes.
I will be going to Susie cakes tomorrow.
Good. Correct answer.
Amazing. This is kind of an interesting one for dietitians. What is your least favorite food?
I am not. My husband listens to this episode. He's going to laugh because we have this disagreement. I'm not a big like raw fish person, so I don't really like sushi, and he loves sushi, but I'm just not a big raw fish person.
That's okay. Sushi is my favorite food, but
I wish I liked it, because I know there's a lot of health benefits and people like love it, and it's, you know, fun to get with like a group of people, but I just cannot do it. I don't know what's going on.
That's okay. That's all right. You have your pasta bar.
Yeah. You want to have some pasta? Come on over. Yeah, there we go.
Exactly. If you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
I'm going to Italy so I get my pasta.
Wow. I'm seeing a theme here.
Yep.
Amazing. That's going to be so fun. And what is your go-to lazy meal?
I'm a big, like, eggs girly. Like, if I was going to just make dinner, say Charlie and Rob's my husband are out, maybe I'm just like going for some eggs, some rice, and some veggies. And I know that's just a random combination of things, but you can get all of your vitamins in, except for vitamin C, with an egg. So get that, get some protein.
Amazing.
That's what I'm making.
I love a good rice and egg bowl with soy sauce. That's also one of my favorites.
So I like to do it with like a runny egg too.
Oh yeah.
That's my thing.
So good. So good. And last question, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink?
I'm an Americano girly. I like an Americano because I'm usually getting like a sweet treat when I go to a coffee shop. Like this morning I went to work and I got Americano and they had like a glazed donut situation. So I like that like contrast of like the bitter and the sweet.
Yeah, balance it out a little. Love it. Well, thank you so much, Riley, for sharing all of this with us. I'm so excited for everyone to listen to your episode and just hear all the inspiring things you have to say. Where can people find you if they want to keep up with you?
I'm most active on Instagram. My handle is at easy.sports.nutrition. My website is also rileybeatty.com. So I'm on, you can check out my website and then also follow along on Instagram.
Amazing. Well, thank you for being here. Good luck with your training, and we will be cheering for you in New York.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to keep up with Riley, you can find her on Instagram at easy.sports.nutrition, and you can head to her website, rileybeattysportsnutrition.com, to learn about her period recovery program. Next week will be a Q&A episode with me, so if you would like to submit any questions to be answered on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can send me an email at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.